As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hey guys.
Hey Devin. All right, Devin, what do you got for us today?
And some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend. Legend became myth. And for 2,500 years, the ring passed out of all knowledge. What's that whistling?
I was trying to whistle the
the Lord of the Ring theme.
I know, harmonizing while whistling, we can't do that. It makes me laugh. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I was I found on YouTube like the extras, Lord of the Rings extras, which I have watched, you know, a million times when we got the DVDs when they came out.
Yeah, right.
Which I just, they're so good. And it's like comfort food watching those extras.
Yeah.
Because there's so much of them, and they're so funny and good, and you love everybody in it. And then all the makers and craftspeople and artists are so good at what they do and so passionate. Yeah. Man, it's so much fun to watch him make that stuff. Yeah. And that quote was written by his, they had like Fran, Peter Jackson,
Philippa Boyens.
She came up with that because they basically tasked her with, you know, the first 6 minutes of the movie or whatever is basically the recap.
Right.
Or it's like trying to get you to know the whole lore of, like five books, basically. Yeah. You know, so. And they're like, all right, you got to do all this in, like, whatever, 2 pages, you know, to start the movie. We have to put everyone who doesn't know anything about it in the right mind. And it's such a good. That's what got into me. I watched The Fellowship of the Ring, the first one, the other night. And it's just so good. Such a great movie. But, I remember just getting so excited that beginning few minutes really puts you in it and gives you all the information you need to know right away. And then that last little bit kind of wraps up, just simple, and some things that should not have been forgotten were lost, stuff like that. It's just a beautiful sentence.
Yeah. 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 That's a good one. And like you were saying, I feel like that watching those extras and watching those movies are very nostalgic. Not that that's like a super, super long time ago, but it definitely is. They came out, you know, like
it was 20 years ago.
High school.
20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So that was when we were in high school. I guess because I was in college, I guess, when they came out, because it was 20 years ago. Jeez.
Yeah.
In 2003.
Right. I mean, they were shooting it in.
Yeah.
I mean, they started in like 98 planning it.
Oh, man. It's wild.
And started shooting in like 2001.
Yeah, and I think the quality of those movies hold up, you know, because of the technology that they were coming up with for all of the, you know, the bigatures and the miniature filming and all that stuff. Everything they were doing in Weta was like, was state of the art at the time. And they were like pushing the boundaries of what you can do with analog and digital, like back and forth.
Right.
And so like what we know now as like CGI and the way movies are shot are a lot, tons of them are influenced by what Weta did then. You know, so although it feels nostalgic, it's like, it doesn't feel dated, you know? So maybe that's why I was like, you know, it feels like nostalgic, but it doesn't feel like that long ago, but it definitely is something from, you know, the, it's like that, that time, like that from high school to college, that kind of end of our childhood into adulthood.
It's really
influenced a lot of, I think just the way, like we, the way I look at art and design and what it means to be an artist and a creator and a maker and how fun that can be and how different you can be. You don't have to be the typical, like, you know, like Peter Jackson's not like the typical Hollywood, you know, good looking, whatever, you know, or, you know, he, like he's not, when you think of this like larger than life person that, that created these things. I mean, we think of him because he's been in all the extras, we know him, but you know, he's just like such a fun, you know, hobbity type person. So it's cool. Like his excitement about what he was doing was what was pushing him to be like so good at it, you know, and to come up with something and to make something that he loved and that he wanted to have that passion and love and everything that you get out of the books into those three movies.
And the Hobbit movies were kind of such a letdown. It's like a lot of the stuff they learned in those movies, they kind of threw out for, instead of trimming it down, tightening things.
Right.
Everything, it was extra bloated. It was way too much CG. Characters that didn't need to be CG were CG. Like Gollum in the movies, and the first ones had to be CG. Just kind of had to be. And that's understandable, and it was really well done, but
yeah.
It was so many characters in like, I don't think I watched the third one because I was so put off by like the first and second one. Like, oh man, this is so, it's weird when someone does something so great and then something else just doesn't hit at all.
You know? Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. And like,
that, I'm thinking it's such a, movies are such a collaborative effort.
Right, yeah.
That sometimes, not only that, and it's kind of a lightning in a bottle thing. You just get the right people together.
Right.
The right environment, the right time, the right script. And then just a crew who's there. The right few people to say yes and no. The right editor. The right, you know, it like all kind of, like so many things are so important to a good movie. If you have a bad editor, it's not good. If you have bad sound design, it's not good. If you have bad music, it's not good. If you have bad director, it's not good. If you have a bad cast, it's not good. Yeah. Right? There's so many huge pillars that you knock one out. It like, so I don't know what happened.
Falls.
Yeah. I think maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe you got excited about it and just went overboard, like some people do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what to me made the first trilogy so good is that it was so believable, right? It was like, oh, this is, you know, this feels like a real world. You know, we're looking like our technology's come far enough that we've gotten out of like fake puppetry into puppetry that's so good that it's believable in a real world. But now 20 years later or whatever, 15 years later, when they started making the Hobbit trilogy, the technology had moved forward enough to be able to make CG look real enough that like there were, it almost seems like they were okay, like somebody was like, okay, we have this technology now that we can do these things, that we can portray these other characters that are more hard to believe that they are real in a real world, but we can do them now because we can do them in CG.
Right.
But then, you know, but then it takes you out of that believability because it's no longer like an orc or Uruk-hai who is like big guy dressed up with makeup and prosthetics to make them seem like a real person because they are a real person.
It works.
Yeah.
But they had like Cockney accents, you know, it was like,
yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
He's like, we got to find it, blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And everything was done, a lot of in camera tricks, right? All that perspective stuff, all the like old school tricks that just work well. And then all of a sudden you have like a Hobbit movie where the camera's flying around through things. And it's like, well, even no matter how good this guy looks, I know it's not real. You can still right. tell. We're not there yet yeah. where you can't not tell.
Yeah, right.
But even if it's good, like a dragon or Gollum, yeah, we understand that it's going to be CG.
Right, exactly.
Or something. Yeah. We understand that that doesn't exist. But a humanoid character
right.
talking to us, we are trained all our lives to know what that looks like.
Yeah, that's that. What's the term?
Uncanny Valley.
Right, yeah.
So we have more practice at seeing that than anything else. Mm. Seeing a human face.
Right.
We know when it's not right. But anyway, so...
Yeah, no, that's good.
Love that stuff. Love the quote that it was kind of, it was just, we need something to wrap it up in yeah. such a beautiful way, such an intro to such a great series.
One of the coolest things that I've experienced over the last, say, 8, 9, maybe 7, 8 years is being able to introduce Corinne to that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like those, mm-hmm. you know, those movies and the Harry Potter movies and all mm-hmm. this, like, mm-hmm. this amazing... movies and things that have like action and adventure and fighting and, you know, some scary stuff. She's now, obviously she's old enough now, but you know, over those last years, she's become old enough to be able to experience that and then have her love it as much as I do. You know, right. like that's a cool thing. And, you know, to watch some of the older ones like Jurassic Park, like she loves the original Jurassic Park and, yeah. you know, some of these great old movies and things like Braveheart, you know, which like these characters and these, you know, these stories that I've loved for such a long time that I can then, you know, show her and right. that's fun. That's a fun, like, oh, I'm so excited for you to see this thing that I absolutely love and like, let's watch it together and, you know, talk about the characters. And she, like, all the time she watches YouTube videos of like analysis or theory about movies and videos
that's
and
great.
Games and stuff. She watches them all the time. And like, so often I'll come in and she'll be watching something on the Lord of the Rings. And, you know, it's like all these, you know, certain thing about a character, like where mm-hmm. if you go back and you look, you can see all these little either spoilers or these little Easter eggs and stuff. And, you know, like different things that happen throughout the movies. And that's always, it's fun to see, like have her get excited about that stuff as much as I am now and was when they first came out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good, great, great stuff and great for inspiration for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I had a transition into something else.
And oh, it was good
okay. For... Well, no, one thing.
Yeah.
What are you drinking? What do you got?
Ah, okay. So drinking a Natty Bow with Nellie and what's it, Nellie?
Nellie? Oh, Nellie the lime.
Somebody's, yeah, the lime juice. Yeah, key lime.
Key lime.
Nellie's famous key lime juice. Nice. Filled up the fridge again. I was happy. It was like, you know, it was just the right time for that picture to happen. I was like, oh, that's great. Full fridge yeah, of bow. Got the Nellie's yeah. on the door. So, yeah, drinking that. And then I have a all-day IPA as my second.
Nice.
How about you? What you got?
I got a 16-ounce from the source. Was it yesterday?
Uh-huh.
I went and bought a Vortex. You know, they don't have them in many stores yet.
Vortex.
They're yeah. brewed in New Freedom in PA, right okay. off the trail.
Oh. Is that the place we stopped at?
No, that was I forget the name of that one. But this like one was actually
train in something or
this was in okay. this was in the town right before that one.
Okay.
That we passed up. And I remember thinking, like, I think there's a brewery. And it is a really cool brewery. And the beers, they turn out to be really good. Because Guy and I, yesterday, both, we biked from Whitehall to New Freedom. I think it was like, bless you. Sorry, it was like 10 miles each way or something. You know, maybe 12 miles.
Nice, right on.
So we flew up there. And then I killed my battery there and back.
Okay.
And it's cold weather too, you know, so I think it like probably lost 30%. But killed my battery. Of course, Guy had a bunch left with his super bike. Yeah. But I had a great ride and went up there and had a flight, which we immediately regretted because we did the math. Because, you know, it was a new place. I was like,
yeah, right.
Hey, you guys have like flights or something? I want to try. And they're like, yeah, here you go. Do a flight. It was like $13 or whatever. I'm like, all right, okay. Cool. Four small beers. That's fine.
Yeah.
And then guys are looking through. He's like, oh, happy hour. I'm like, oh, I should have guessed. It's a weekday. And it's,
yeah, right.
It was like 4 o'clock. I was like, man, I almost always ask for specials or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yep.
And then, sure enough, like, it was like a dollar off any beer. And the beer we wanted was already, I think, was like $5.
Oh, man.
So you could basically get a 16-ounce draft, really big, nice draft for like $4. But instead we got 16 ounces of flight beers for like 13. Guy was real butthurt. He was, you know, him. He knows he missed out on a deal. He's upset. He's like, oh, man, what am I drinking? What is this? But then, drinking so,
$18
I
shot.
I know. But we had a good time. We managed to drink our flight, and I bought four, and then took them back.
Nice.
Hung the bag off the back of the bike, and
nice. That's great.
Rode home. So good stuff. Anyway, this it's an Irish, like a red style Irish ale.
Right on. Nice. That's Vortex.
Yeah, okay. It's called Harkin.
Harkin.
But nice. It's a good. Their red ale was really nice, and their porter was really nice, and then they had some lighter ones that are just kind of, you know, classic standard, you know, tastes like Yingling or something.
Yeah, right.
Pretty yeah. simple stuff that was very unoffensive, I'd say, to the taste.
There you go.
That's, you know what I mean? Like something that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of, if you're thinking like a Yingling.
Right.
Like it's not going to, you're not going to go, ugh.
It's like, yeah, it's, oh, just an is, easy
this
drinking.
Yeah, this is fine. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, right on.
But yeah, we had to swing by there if we bike up there again. And then, real quick, we biked the other day at, oh man, we got to go this trail with everybody. It's off of Susquehanna. Is that runs,
yep,
north, mm-hmm, to east, kind of down, right, through PA, yeah, down, yep, ends in Havre de Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Up near 3 Mile Island.
Okay.
Okay, the nuclear disaster place. But we went over there, and that was such a cool trail. They paved the whole thing. It's like 14 miles long.
Oh, nice.
And that goes through a couple towns. It runs next to the river there. It goes under bridges, through little towns, through fields. Like, the whole thing's paved. It was really cool. Sweet. But the problem with that is, for some reason, I didn't charge my battery, or it didn't charge properly. So I started out with out with basically 60%. And our plan was to get to this certain town, stop, have a beer and lunch, and then head back. But by the time we got to that town, my last light was blinking.
Oh, man.
So I basically went all the way and then
had to pedal
and got stuck. I was pedaling, and then I did what we did on the ride, is I held onto the back of Guy.
That's great.
Because he's got the child seat on the back with a handle on it, on the top.
Nice.
So I would grab on that and kind of lock myself up, and it was pouring rain because we didn't think it was going to rain. So we're both like, it's like 40 degrees, pouring rain. I'm hanging on to him. We were soaked.
Sounds like an awesome time.
we had a great time. We're laughing.
I know. Yeah, time. Exactly. That's like, yeah, it's like Baker Camp. Yeah, it's like any time that there's like something extreme, it's just a memory. Yeah, it makes memories. Like, that's great.
Yeah, and Guy, of course, we go into the place. It was we'd have to stop there too, if we ever go through. Really cool place, a little old, like old building, probably from the 1800s. You know.
Yeah.
Looks like an old tavern. We're having some beers and some food, and we come out to get on our bikes. They're all soaked. And the guy's like, oh, my gloves. He had left. He had taken his gloves off to lock it up and just left them on the bike. So the whole ride back,
oh, man,
he had to be as gloveless. And I was like, don't you, because he joked about having an extra pair of socks. I said, throw that over your hand. So he's wearing these two tube socks on his hands. Here's it back.
That's great. Yeah. Of course he is. You get back like, and you're like, oh, here, you want my other pair? My hands are sweaty.
Yeah, we made that joke.
Nice. My hands are kind of sweaty.
Anyways, that was a long roundabout to saying what beer I have.
Nice.
So, do we want to talk about the new video?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. It's funny. I'm actually, I've been sitting here like toying with this little forged Mjolnir hammer pendant that I made the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about wanting to get back out into the forge because, you know, it had been a couple weeks or whatever since we had finished forging the cutlery set. So we just put out the video on the forged cutlery set.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a fun project and something that I kind of started or kind of became interested in over the summer. Maybe the last like couple weeks of summer before I went back to school. I was just out in the forge pretty often working on some different stuff. And so I like forged a couple of spoons and a spatula and a ladle, and was just in this, the idea of doing some kind of, more like utilitarian forging. So like forging everyday things rather than, although like a knife, you know, which is a lot of what I've forged in the past is a thing, but an object, but it's not as like, you know, as like used every day, like a spoon or a ladle or a spatula. Right.
So right, that was right,
like
right.
More of like utilitarian, whether that's a, you know, kitchen or just a, you know, a fire poker or something like that. So I was thinking it'd be kind of fun to like make some more things like that just, test and like push my, skill as like a smith, but you know, doing smaller things, right? So it's like more control, less like just big muscle hammering, bang bang, you know, more like small detail work, you know, trying to be really specific about what I'm doing, how I'm hitting, like hammer control, you know, making these shapes, and then also thinking about the design of things and just the kind of evenness of forging, and you know, trying to do a lot of forge to finish things as much as possible, you know, a little bit of grinding here and there, which I don't mind, it, you know, I'm not like a purist, but you know, just trying to do some interesting work with just what you can do with just the steel. How do you, you know, how do the lines work? How is the symmetry? How is the design? How's the weight and the balance on an object? It's like something you want to hold and use in your hand. So I thought it'd be fun to try that forged cutlery set. I had seen went to the Renaissance Festival, I think the second to last weekend this year, and there was a little knife and I guess just like a single poker, almost like a metal scribe, but just a single metal. So you can imagine it would be like you know, fork and knife type of thing, but if just a single tine rather than a pair or like multiples. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was cool and like kind of together, so I thought that'd be fun to make a set like that, or to make a combination of fork, knife, spoon. Because again, those are kind of more utilitarian, more useful objects. And how can you do something like that, but forge it in a way that's also beautiful and takes some technical skill? And then also at the end was to figure out a way to make it out of scraps, which I think is kind of fun too, you know, because that's something that I had done over the summer with the ladle, which I made out of the railroad spike, and then the spatula, which I made out of the lawnmower blade.
Yeah, no, that's just, it's such a fun, I think it makes the object, especially if it doesn't have to, if it's not a knife, it doesn't have to hold an edge. It's not, yeah, all the quote unquote wrong steel, it all works.
Right, yeah.
A ladle, a spatula is never going to get, no one ever says this ladle's too dull.
Lost
its bowl, like,
yeah.
It just flattens right. Out I can't and, scoop you know, anything anymore.
Right, and forging mild steel is a lot easier than forging high carbon
right.
steel.
It right moves right a lot right right
easier,
so it's a little bit more instant gratification with like, oh yeah. I turned that quick, that flattened out quick,
right? Yeah,
even though shooting it does feel very slow,
right? Yeah. Yeah, because all the moves are
just slow, hanging, you know? Out. I mean, there's so much trimming and cutting. Like I saw, he's, you know, that was like four heats. I mean, that's right, also your forge. It doesn't, you know, it's not a super hot, like red hot thing that stays. You know, it's not right. as crazy as some of the. And you're making smaller swings because you're not as, you know, you're not a master blacksmith.
Right. Exactly. So, yes, it's not my hammers like, you know, huge like. You know, like, yeah, not, I'm not making a ton of ground in each heat, you know, so.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And without what do they call it? Automatic hammers. Those
what power those? Hammer.
Power or hammer, right.
A press without, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, but it's a cool process, and it's, you know, it was a kind of a bitch to edit because.
Right.
Like I told you a little bit about it last night. I was like. And we had talked about it while you were shooting it. I was like, I think it's important to show that you're doing three at one time.
Right. Yeah. Because that was the other thing, you know, trying to utilize the like efficiency of the forge and like how to, mm-hmm. how to be an efficient use of time and, you know, fuel and like my body. Right. So like had three things in the forge and going through, you know, pulling things out, forging on one of them, putting it back in. By the time I get that one back in, the, you know, one that I started two ago is now hot again. So it's like, you know, not a ton of like downtime, just waiting for things to heat up.
Yeah. And I mean, I complain about it being a slow shoot, but that made it a little better because there wasn't so much. All right, we're going to wait, you know, whatever, a few minutes until this heats up. We're just going to hang around and do nothing. There was always something to shoot. So I edited it in the beginning, like the first half where it's back and forth, and you're kind of seeing things. A few movements here, a few shape changes here of each one.
Right.
Trying to get progress. And trying to keep it, keep the pace of the video moving. Because there's, I mean, it's all, it seems to be the same thing. You're bending over, just hitting something, hammering.
Right.
Yeah. So 25 minutes of hammering without showing, okay, that thing just bent, that thing just flattened, that corner's down now, that's stretched out now. I think those are what you have to try to capture. And then once that went through, then the visually interesting stuff to me was when you heat it up and you started making the movements and twists and bends and the bowl of the spoon, stuff like that. So I was like, all right, I'm going to focus now on each thing until pretty much completion. Until you have to do finished grinding and until you gotta blacken it and all.
Yeah, right. Because it's all that prep for that like final bend, twist, move.
Yeah,
thing. Yeah. Yeah. Just like getting everything to the right shape, and then from that shape, then you shape it into whatever it's going to be. Like,
right.
Obviously, the biggest one for that is the fork, right? Because the fork is two tines of a fork, but it's only two because it's two ends of a long skinny piece that come together in a multiple twists that then come together and put the tines together. So up until that point, up until that bend, which is, I think I did that in maybe three heats or so, you know, I had 25 heats before that was just drawing out one long piece of steel into a long, you know, straight piece that was pointing on both ends.
So much of that was just like, all right, we see. He's all right. Let's skip a few heats. Okay, it's getting longer.
Yeah.
All right. Now, next shot, he's got to cut it off because that's enough. Like, we know. Yeah. We know what he's doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing too. It's like, you know, when as I've been doing more reels, you know, I'm trying to think like, okay, how do I show, you know, one step of each part of the process, so that way someone can get the idea of the whole thing, but they're just seeing one step, you know, or like one or two steps, depending on what I, you know, what it is I'm showing. But, you know, like just editing that, funneling it down to just the bare minimum information that you need to know. And so, right, when I'm just drawing out one piece of steel and a long spike, a double-ended spike, there's only so much you have to show that gives that information, right? It shows that that's what's happening. Like, okay, yeah, maybe two, three shots of that happening. And then you understand, okay, he's doing this for a while until it gets it long and skinny, but it's the same thing, just like working one piece of steel out until it's longer.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're doing a minute reel, it's even so much more so.
Right.
You have, you just gotta chop out every little bit.
The like actual, the big moves or the twists or things like that, that's what people want to see. That's what they're curious about. Like, oh, how did that happen? What did you do? What tool did you use? What thing did you bend it around? How did you heat it? Like, how many heats did it take? Yeah, that's the things they want to see.
That's the magic part. Mm-hmm. A human bending steel. Mm-hmm. You know? It's steel. You don't bend steel.
Right.
But all of a sudden, you're bending it like it's, you know, like putty or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh man, look at that. Like, I think it's just really, really a cool part of it. So, me going through and trying not to show too much of the each other thing before we get there. Like, trying to avoid showing close ups of you putting something back in the fire that showed progress of the other thing before the people saw it. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to, the twist is already there. And then all of a sudden, five shots later, I'm going to the beginning of that thing again.
Right.
So, yeah. Like, skipping around, kind of like hiding the other stuff.
Right, yeah.
and then, getting that done. And I told you, Dust, last night, it was like, whatever, 3 nights ago before I uploaded it, I was like doing a little quality control, watching it again. And then it's getting towards the end. I was like doing the end stuff. Like I was adding in the patrons, like the text on the end. That's always like the last thing I do. I'm like, everything's good. Let me pop the patrons on at the end and then, you know, make my final in and out and export. I was like, I don't know. Thank goodness. I don't know why I thought of it. I was like, man, that the shot of the spoon was really cool. Right. Of you hammering it into the wood stump.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, did I see that? Sure enough, that part of the spoon I just had not included in my, I don't know, in my, the trickiness of editing three different things that all happened at once in not in order.
Right.
I just lost it. I moved on. I went, okay, the spoon shape's there. Okay, now I'll move on to the fork.
Right. Get to the twist of the handle of the spoon. Right. That's also an interesting thing, right? Yeah.
Right. So I was like, oh, no. So then I put that back, and then that was, like I said, some of my favorite shots and, like, a really good sequence in the video, and I think it'll be a really cool short. Will be you taking it, quick bend, you hammering it into the stump, all that flame, all that smoke, and then you kind of looking at it, holding it up. I think that'll make a great, like, 1 minute short.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, and the you know, blacksmithing shorts have done so well. You know, and it, yeah, the shorts and reels and stuff have done really well, so that's good. Yeah, and that's like three different objects that were all forged out in that video, so that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun, and it was cool to, like, again, you know, I kind of talked about it, but I haven't really gone into it, the idea of using scrap steel for that. So for each of those things, you know, I knew the look, I knew the design that I wanted before we started, but I didn't know what steel I was going to use to forge each thing, other than the fact that the knife is a knife, so it had to be some type of hardenable steel, whether that's a leaf spring or a file or a, you know, a coil spring or something that had some carbon in it, so it could be hardenable. So that was like going from the shop and doing the drawings and then going out into the smithy and like digging through the bucket. Like that was, you know, a real shot of me actually digging through the bucket, not knowing what I was going to find. And right. So I was like, let me start pulling some stuff out. And so I was like, it was funny because like watching the video, I'm like, oh, this might work. This is kind of cool. You know? And then in the end we use different things. It's because that's how it was going. It was like just pulling stuff out. Although I did pull that little, lug wrench. Yeah. I was like, pulled it out. I was like, well, that was definitely a reel. You know, that was a real shot. That wasn't me like, oh, this is cool. Put it back in, pull it out again. Let me make sure I get that shot. It was like, I was definitely yanking it out. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know?
And the file, obviously, I think the file and the tongs weren't in there. Maybe the half tong was.
Yeah. But
I think they were on that little table anyway. So I got a lot of you digging through. And then I think, the only one I was like, well, I think the only one we really got was the socket, but then then we got a shot of you looking through and going, oh, this file's cool, and that was all real. You're just talking.
Yeah.
This one's cool, this one's not, which is, I think, important to capture when we can, and that... The good thing about blacksmithing and doing big moves and twists and looking at stuff is you can't fake... You can, but your reactions and what happens, everyone knows it's like really happening.
Right. Yeah.
Either the twist went well or not. And you're gonna it's gonna get a good reaction from you. Right, which was good on your part for giving good reactions, but it makes it a little bit easier because you're just genuinely happy that like the twist turned out great.
Right, because that's like it's like one movement. It's a thing that, like you said, it could be, you know, we could twist it and it doesn't turn out great, and I untwist it and hammer it all back to straight and do it again. Like, but that's not going to happen. Like, some of the fun part of the twist is trying to control where the heat is in the part that you want to twist. So if you want, like, a real, like, localized small twist, you heat up just a small area and then you twist it, you know. But if you want, like, I wanted that spoon handle to have, like, one kind of 180 degree twist in it. So like just a long, smooth twist. So I just made sure the handle was really warmed up, which was funny. Cause then when we were like in the video where I'm like about to twist it, you know, I heat it up, I clamp it in the vise. And then I'm like trying to get the wrench to like be the right size and all. And it's like cooling down. And I'm like, and I was wondering, I'm like, am I going to do it now? Am I going to put it back in the forge? Well, I couldn't remember. So like, but it was just like, just right. It was just the right amount of
right. heat. Your reaction was like, I got some time, but not that much. And you were like, yeah, you were like trying to get it. And then it just worked out. And the whole thing was one big long, it was like, you know, whatever, 40-second shot, which is a long one, so.
Yeah, yeah, it was a good twist. But like you said, you know, that's one specific movement in blacksmithing that, like, is not a repeatable thing, whereas, like, you know, when we're doing other things and, you know, other making other things, that there's, like, more of a repeated, you know, effort. Like, if I'm grinding a knife or whatever, like, things can happen over and over again, or, you know, clamping something together, gluing something together, like that can, it can happen in multiple parts. So, but
right, but yeah, that came out well, and, you, and yeah, each step was nice. Like I said, tricky mm-hmm. at it, but mm-hmm. it came out nice. There was a big chunk, and this is why I think if I have to give tips to anyone about while editing long videos is to, if you have the time, watch what you have every time you start back up again, like an editing mm-hmm. session.
Right, yeah.
Like, if it's 20 minutes, watch it. Sit right. back and watch it every time, because yeah. you're feeling the flow again. Because obviously, mm-hmm. if you don't watch it, I'm going to drop a song here, I'm going to slow it down. You want to, mm-hmm. you really want to go, like, all right, like, it's getting, we need things to happen. That's usually what happens, is you start tightening things up. Like I always say, it just gets faster and faster towards the end.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm like, all right, too much. We're already at, like, 20 minutes. It's got to start, like, it's got to start getting moving here or whatever. So, but each time, watch what you have and get a feeling for it. Because one time in the middle, or like I said, 20 minutes in, I had watched and I had, like, a song in it, some music, and I had it all, like, worked out, ups and downs, and volume up and down when you're talking, like, had it all worked out, and then I was like, yeah, we don't need this, like, mm-hmm. it's too much music, like, there was, like, music 3 minutes before it, and it just, right. if the music doesn't feel like it adds something, or it's, there's times where it feels a little like it's forced, like, I don't need a song here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't network television where every second behind something you need, like, another song. Right. Like, it's like, nah, just let it, like, breathe. And a lot of that, I think a lot of it was during the metal twisting and shaping. Like, I had some music, but I was like, I kind of just want to hear you talking about it and just sit with it. Because it's, like, the most interesting part. So if you can right. just, if you can hang with it and just sit here for, like, the 5 minutes of you, like, adjusting things and doing the fork, like, adjusting little things here and there, I thought it was really nice. But that was one where I just, like, all right, delete that whole song, like, we don't need it,
right?
It's too much.
yeah I think you know, I don't, like, when I look, I don't, because I'm not editing, I don't actively think about that stuff. But one of the things, as you were saying earlier, about, like, how you eventually, you'll, like, kind of speed up as you move through the video.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, okay, it's we showed some stuff, we're building, you know, by the time you get to the end, you're like, I gotta fit a bunch of stuff in, and I'm already kind of edited out a ways. Mm-hmm. I think that naturally you know, helps the progress of the video, right? Because right. you're like, you're getting into it in the beginning. So the first half is like, okay, we know that the first half, you're not going to see a culmination in the first half. It's because it's just the first half. Right. But eventually you have to reach that, like, summit, you know, like the crescendo, and then you have the, like, the end. So you don't want that crescendo to be right in the middle. You want it to be closer to the end. You know, that's the, like, the climax. So you want the climax right. to be, like, so you're going, like, uphill, and then it's getting, like, faster and faster and faster, and then bam, you hit the climax, and then there's, like, a little, like, slow down at the end. So I think that works naturally to, like, build up a story, is to build that pace. So you're, like, you're following along, and then you're getting closer to it, and it's happening, it's almost there, and it's speeding you up, and you're like, you know, if things kept going really slow, you might lose interest in getting to the end, right? Getting to the climax, because you're like, it's still slow, like, Like, I'm getting excited. So as you're getting excited to see the final piece, things are speeding up.
Yeah,
so
don't spend, unless we haven't explained it, don't spend like 4 minutes on the sharpening.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, spend like 3 shots on it towards the end, because we want to see. We've seen so much it building, grinding back, put it in, done, tempered, blah, blah, blah. It's like,
all right, handles on, everything's on. Yeah.
It's there. The sharpening of the knife at the end is important. I want to show that it happened, but it's like, let's just speed through that part and have it done.
Right.
I don't even know. I think I show the sharpening of this one. See, I don't know. See, that's how much I sped it up. I probably...
Yeah. Now, that was a little bit... Yeah, a little bit at the end of...
Sometimes I'll just like, jump like a chunk of... I see that I have 500 clips and I'm on like 340. I'm like, gosh, like there's 160 shots left. Like, all right, I'm going to just jump through. I'm like, scan through them with my eyes. Like, I don't know. There's like 20 shots. And I'll go, I'll jump to like 100 left.
yeah, just like, that works.
Come on.
Come on. This is come on. Ridiculous.
Something's got, we've seen enough. Yeah. I mean, it's enough.
Yeah. And I always, with knife making videos, when you get to the end and people do the sharpening and then they're like, they do a whole bunch of different cut tests and stuff. I'm like, I'm not as worried about that. Like, I mean, that proves that it is a knife that's sharp, but I don't really care how sharp it is. You know, like, I like that it's sharp. I like that you show that it's a knife and then I saw you sharpening and maybe you cut something with it. But I think within our videos, usually it's like, all right, we're done. Like, here it is. You know, like, you know, maybe I'm cutting something. Maybe, you know, we've done the paper cut thing in the past, you know, but usually it's like, if I'm going to use it for something, like if it's a big chopper, like I'll chop something with it or, you know, whatever. Or if it's like with that knife, it was like cut the chicken, you know, because it was like, it's a food.
Cutting the chicken and buttering the
yeah, right. The bread. You know, it's like, I don't really need to see. You don't have to prove to me how sharp the knife is at the end.
Because
as a knife maker, that's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the design and the building of it and the steps that went into it and your tricks and things that I could use. I know how to sharpen a knife, you know, like if I want to know how to sharpen a knife, then I'll watch a knife sharpening video.
Right. And you can make anything look sharp, like anything that you sharpen up right there. And then it's going to be able to do a good cut no matter what kind of knife it is.
Right. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But then, I mean, we always include, like, the slow motion nice shots at the end. Like, give you a little bit, give you, like, 30 seconds of, like, after you wrap it up. Then we get a little bit of the nice, like, beauty shots of it, just so you can kind of take it in. Watch Dustin eat some dinner.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That was fun.
So, yeah, did all that, and then... I just put something on Instagram and showing the first time. This is the first time I ever used AI because Photoshop told me. It's like, hey, you have an update ready. And now we're including this AI generative tool just in every Photoshop now.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. So I updated it. And they give you a little tutorial, which was mind-blowing. I mean, they give you like... They sit there in the tutorial and show the video and they tell you what to grab this. Like they give you the picture.
Right.
And it was like a house on a watery cliff. And then it's insane. Like you pick the house. It's like dragging a square over something.
Right.
And I say, make it a yellow house. And it makes it a yellow house and it looks perfect. And then I say glowing windows. Like there's a fire in there and it looks perfect. And then it says, okay, now expand the scene. It will auto-generate everything, mountains, water. But first get rid of this cliff on the right. So I get rid of the cliff, and it disappears and generates everything behind it. And then I just take my crop tool and take the left, like I said, expand the left and the right of the landscape out like you're like two more shots. And then it auto-generates everything, and it gives you options of what you want. There's a different mountain. Oh, the shore comes up closer here. It's insanity. Like crazy, crazy, crazy. And it all looked pretty much perfect.
Right.
Like I couldn't tell, really.
Right.
And then so I was like, all right, I'm going to mess around with the thumbnail, which was either going to be, and we shot it this way, either you using them.
Right.
And then I think maybe it was a last minute decision. Okay, let's just get some of them by themselves.
Right.
Like propped up like, with all the food.
Right. Yeah, because I had like the knife on the bread or something at one point, and I was like, that's kind of cool. So we're like, well, let's try it in a few different ways. Like, you know. And then it was like, okay, here, we want the picture of the forks. So you're like, I want a picture of each one independently. And then we're like, okay, we'll put them with, you know, it was like the food or whatever was around was kind of our way to prop it up. So it wasn't just like sitting on the workbench. So it's like,
Yeah, it all looked good. You picked your, like, good, cool plates, like a wooden plate and a nice one with and a decorative thing and a nice bowl. And everything just looked right.
Right, yeah.
And, So yeah, it took those and then ended up using those for the thumbnail. And I took each thing and just cropped around it, like general, like circle crop that, and kind of trim that, and dragged all three into Photoshop and spun them around so they could kind of all be almost as if they're on the same table,
right?
Because the way they were just didn't everything. It would have been like next to each other, just doesn't line up as a table.
Right.
So I kind of spun them around, and again, I showed that on my Instagram, kind of where it was. And there was a bunch of big white empty spaces, you know?
Yeah.
Which traditionally with Photoshop, I mean, I don't have the skills anymore. Maybe when I was learning about it, I could have expanded the brown.
Right.
You can and smeared it and added some stuff to make it.
Right. Use the clone tool to move some stuff
over. Take or other chunks.
It
and then, but it would have taken a long time to make it look good. And I just, I basically lassoed that whole middle area first. I forget what my prompt was. I think I said make it a table or you know, table or something.
Right.
And just blended it together. Like right away.
Yeah.
Kind of in a weird way, but it does it so it kind of looks like natural. Like it's a bit off, but not in an artificial way. It's in a natural there's bumps and things all over the table. So I think it copied that. There was lines and holes and because it's like your workshop table, so there are all types of things on it. Stains and so that looked pretty good. But then I still had the white on the right side and I was like, well, maybe that can be the edge of the table. And my thought originally was you're looking off the edge of a table and you see the grass below it.
Right.
But I just wrote, I think on the prompt was add grass.
Right.
And I just lassoed the white, and I forget what I said. But it was just that simple. And that was the first image that came up that you see there, which was, and it was all properly, and the grass came over the edge of the brown.
Right.
Like it, as if it was laying on it
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of just, it's out of focus. Like the stuff that should be down low is out of focus. And the few of the pieces that are coming up towards the camera are a little bit sharper. Like it just worked right away.
That's
like
crazy.
And it gave it an interesting look right away. Like, oh, cool. It's kind of like this. They kind of put the table down on the ground or whatever. Like it was just interesting.
Right. Yeah.
That's all it has to be. It doesn't necessarily have to make sense. It just has to be like visually interesting.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Compositionally, it works. Like it works as a whole, like visually they all work together. There's nothing that stands out as not right. You know, and that's the key, right? It has to work together. It has to be visually interesting. It has to look like it just kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing catches your eye that stands out. And it was funny because I was looking at your two pictures, the one with like, you know, before you use the AI and then after and the, that white or metal like swatch of which was the tea channel on my bench. Yeah. It kind of just like blended it and made it into just like a splotch, you know, whatever, just like a thing that's there. And it just matched every other splotch or thing that was on the background, you know, just did it really well. We were like, I don't know what this is, but it doesn't like jump out at you where it's like hold your attention. It just kind of fades in and it works with the other splotches and irregularities to the, you know, the background.
Right. it's cool. Yeah. It almost makes things. I don't, maybe that's the trick is it makes things not stand out.
Right.
The key is to not to be glaringly obvious.
Right.
So it's all about blending in. So it just takes the information quicker than we can. And what the thing is, what it looks like, what everything else around it looks like, and I guess compares it to a million other things that look like that, and just makes it, again, like, inoffensive to the eye. Yes. Right?
That's crazy.
Just let it. And then all I did, I blended a few little lines that were, I think that's the trick with AI, is just having someone, it's touch-ups, and picking the right things and the right prompts to make it work. And then touching it up. And obviously, from one picture to the next, it was a lot of Lightroom and a lot of just normal photo touch-up stuff.
Right.
Like, the one is very, the one on the left, the photos are, compared to what it ends up being, they're very bland.
Right.
They're not, the colors don't pop, the items don't pop. So it's all, after that is, again, the lighting works right. To start out with, like, we captured a pretty good pictures in it to start out with,
right? Yeah, so we gave it something, you know, quality to start with,
right? And then
just added on top. It added.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And then added, just made it, you know, everything shine and glimmer and highlight the certain things and bump stuff up. I always bump up clarity and texture, always. Right,
yep.
And that just sharpens everything up. And for this type of stuff, it always looks cooler. If it makes it a little bit grimier, that's cool too. You know, it's like,
right? Yeah, yeah. It's in a grimy shop. You know, right, so like, right, the more like grit and the more texture, the better. The more like theatrical, and you know, that's how we want it to feel. Yeah, like,
right. So
yeah, it's this, like, yeah,
that was really fun. And another AI thing I used, which ended up being the title, is I asked ChatGPT to figure out another way of saying the title. And that's one of the suggestions. Nice. And it came out, transferring tools into kitchen treasures. And all I said was, tools, no, trash into treasures.
Right.
And it said transforming tools into kitchen treasures. Like it just, I was like, oh, that's kind of a nice way of putting it. So another AI. So we used it for the title and the thumbnail.
That's, yeah. And, you know, like, it's not like we didn't put a lot of effort. You know, like, I was actually showing Nicole our conversation back and forth. Where, like, and it's the same thing we always do. We always get to the end where we're about to, you know, finish up. And then, okay, now let's spitball. Let's brainstorm titles back and forth until something jumps out to us. Or one of us is like, yeah, that's kind of good. Or one of us is like, wait, I don't like this because of this. And then so we just kind of go back and forth. And so today we were doing that. That was probably like, oh, dog's barking. Probably, you know, 30, 40, 50 different titles that we went back and forth, you know, just kind of coming up with ideas. And then, you know, getting to a point where we kind of liked what we had and we liked the kind of sound of it and the combination of the few different things. And then that one, yeah, the one where you're like turning tools into treasures, like that was kind of cool because it was, you know, it was a file and a pair of tongs and a lug wrench, you know, that was using tools into treasures, you know. So it was like reusing something, and that was kind of what we were trying to capture, that it wasn't just forging these three different tools for cutlery. It was taking scrap, and like we kept doing, like you were suggesting like trash to treasure, which is like an interesting sound, but in my mind none of that stuff is trash, right? You know, it's all I was like, well,
but it, you know, like, but you could say it because, but yeah, it's not trash, but it is sitting outside in like a bucket of overgrown by, so you could say it,
it's definitely like, but I like the idea because it is like, if I didn't put it into the scrap bin, it would have gone into the trash. Right, so it was something that could have been trash that has been saved and then now reused. Right, so it was like the whole, like, you, we were talking back and forth about, like, or you had suggested like scrap to scrumptious, which is pretty good. I like that for a while because of the alliteration, right, just fun stuff, to say, you know? And that was kind of fun because it was like, yeah, I went something about like the scrap bin or the like, I don't know. I was trying to like think of a good way to do that. But then it was like the transferring tools into treasures, kitchen treasures. And I was like, well, that's good. Right. Because that is what it is. It's like something that was a tool or, you know, something that had a purpose in the past. And now it's like being changed into something new, you know, a different purpose. I like that too. It was cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good. I didn't realize you did that AI as well. That's good.
I just asked it, real quick, because I was going to start prompting it and trying to figure out, like, I was going to put all of our ideas into it. And then you just say, hey, shorten this. Give me a longer version of this. Don't use that word. It's like a real quick thing that you can do in 2 minutes. And then it kind of just came out with that. I was like, oh, that's kind of nice.
Good.
No, it turned out great.
Yeah, shortly before that, I was actually doing some grading, and I didn't have any students in school today, but we had parent-teacher conferences, so I was, like, doing conferences, and I'd have gaps in between, so I was kind of doing a bunch of different stuff, grading student work, as well as chatting with you back and forth and doing different things, and I had just actually, I was going through some of my students' artist statements. My seniors are writing their artist statements for their portfolios that they're working on right now. And so I was reading through some of them, and I got to this one student who had written their artist statement, and it was like very eloquent and very poetic. And now this student has in the past shown me that he's a pretty good writer, but it's very, very different than his normal personality. Like, he's not super eloquent and he's not super talkative and he's not like, he doesn't really talk like that.
It just doesn't sound like him. Yeah.
It just doesn't sound like him. And like, when I saw that and like, I don't know if it was before or after we had the conversation about the AI, but I was like, I wonder if this is AI generated, this artist statement, you know, it's like, it's very poetic. And so I like, I just copy and pasted the whole thing and searched it. And one of the, like, it didn't actually come up with any hits. Like, it wasn't plagiarized as far as I could tell. But one of the hits it did come up with was like, you know, is AI generated, like, is AI generation, whatever. Like, it was basically an article that was like talking about the, you know, the idea of like, is this something we should use? Is this, should it not be used? Should we use it in writing? Is it okay if you use it in writing? Is it not okay if you use it in writing? You know, so,
yeah.
And I was having that conversation with my co-teacher, like, you know, should that be used? Like, when should it be used? When shouldn't it be used? Like, if we can ask it to, if we can give it all this stuff and give it this information that is about the way we feel and think, and then we ask it to write something and then it writes it, like, how much stuff do you have to give it before to make it your own writing, or is it just somebody else's writing, you know what I mean, or something else's writing, like,
right?
So yeah, like, I don't know, you know, I like, I want them to be honest, like, because if someone reads your writing, they're assuming you wrote it, so then they want to, like, they, especially if they're having a conversation, like, our, my students are writing these artist statements, and then they're going to be presenting their portfolios and talking about their work to professionals, mm-hmm. right? So, like, if they have something written, then they should be able to talk to it. Now, there were also, like, enough mistakes in the writing that, like, it was a little bit, not, like, big mistakes, but it just kind of worded in a way that wasn't exactly perfect, that, like, you know, it led me to believe that it was his writing. But I've noticed this year specifically, a little bit last year, that he's like a pretty elegant and eloquent writer. And so I'm not sure if that's like now I'm thinking back, I'm like, oh, was he just using AI the whole time, or, right. or is he actually a good writer? Like, so I have to actually like maybe check with some of other teachers and look back at some of his earlier writing and kind of compare it, you know, like, it's, I'm in a weird position. Like, I don't really yeah. care, as long as it does say what, and kind of the way it was written was, it was kind of like a little extra poetic and like a little bit more than I would think that he would say, but I don't know. It's hard to know.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing. I think what's going to happen is we're going to find a different way to grade children.
Right. Yeah.
And we won't be so heavy on writing and essays, because we'll know they can easily be
right,
like, auto-generated, like, tricked. Yeah. So it's going to have to be, I know when there's a lot of kids, you can't get everyone to orally explain things to you, but right. that it might just have to be that. You'll be like, all right, the comprehension of the kid on what, like, when I talked to him, we sat down for 10 minutes and I asked him questions.
Right.
And he got yeah. it, or he didn't. Like, that'll be the paper.
Right.
You'll just have yeah. time to talk to the kids one by one and be like, what do you think about that? What do you think about this? And they're just going to have to do it off the top of their head.
Yeah, and, like, right, like, a lot of things, like, I used to have my students do a lot of handwriting. Like, at the end of a project, I'd have them mm-hmm. do what I call a reflection and self-assessment. There's some like questions that they have to reflect on the project, and then they have to give themselves an assessment for the different parts of the project. They give themselves like a grade of 1 to 10, and they say why, you know. And but during COVID and during virtual learning, I basically switched over those, instead of it being written by hand, and that's just all digital. Mm-hmm. Like, we use Google Classroom, and they have it there digitally, and they can type right into it. So I don't even know if I have like a handwritten thing from him from far enough back to know, you right. know, like, and even if I did have one from like 2019, like, he's a senior now, so of course he could have grown in those years, you right. know, like,
ninth grade to 12th grade is crazy.
Yeah, he could yeah. be way more eloquent in his writing now than he was then, you know, even though that might not be the way he talks or the way he comes off. Like, he's kind of a quiet guy, you know, so I just don't know, you know, it's like, I don't know. And does it matter? You know, like, maybe he's found a way to find his voice using AI or using like
yeah.
other things. And that's fine. Like, if he feels comfortable and he can, you know, like, if he can talk about it the way that he's like, the way that he's showing that he's writing about it, then I'd be more convinced. But it's hard to know that, because he doesn't really do it that way, you know, about his artwork and his design work and stuff. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. Cause I'm torn, because as a teacher, you know, I'm like, well, I want to know that he knows what he means, because it I need to know that, because I need to grade mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. But as an artist, like, the way artist statements are written are so abstract, and like, they're really encouraged to be like way out there, you know, mm-hmm. like how more grandiose can you be? How more abstract can you be? How more, you know, like, poetic and visual can you be in an artist statement? You really push it to try to make it this like very artistic, flowery, visual statement, you know? So you're pushing yourself further and further and further each time to push it. So then by the time you get to an artist statement, it's very over the top, and that's just the way, you know, contemporary artist statements are. So if AI can do that for you and it still makes sense and it still works with the artwork or the design or whatever it is, if it makes sense with it, then why not? You know, like through that perspective, as like an artist and as a maker, I'm like, yeah, you know, if it can do it, then why not let it do it?
Right. And
like, it's not doing the work. Like he still did the work. I'm in class with him. He has all his pieces for his portfolio. It's just him writing his artist statement.
Right. Right. And for art, I think you can get away with it a little bit because that's not the part that necessarily matters.
Right.
It's important to be clear with what you want to do kind of, but it's not, you're not trying to become a doctor and explaining how to do heart surgery, you know, where it's right, like, exactly. Hey, do you really comprehend this? Cause this sounds like it came straight, like you don't know what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We need you to talk us through. We need to see you do it. It's like, hey, I've got the art part. I've done the physical work. If you want something interesting or over the top or abstract, like I'm just going to find an interesting voice through this AI thing and make that work for me and try to hide it and or not the best I can. Like maybe hide it from teachers, but when he gets beyond that, he can get away with saying, hey, I used AI and this is how I did it. This is a modern tool. This is a interesting aspect of art that we're going to have to grapple with. And that's like a whole theme in itself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like just the idea of digital photography as opposed to 35mm. You know, it's like, you know, but people back in the day would be like, yeah, of course you can go out and take 1,000 pictures and get one good one and be a good photographer. Like, that's not what photography is. You know, and even now, like, every time I post on Instagram, I use a filter. Mm-hmm. Like, I will say that I tend to almost always 99% of the time use the same filter. So like, there's consistency.
Found something you like, yeah.
Exactly, right. And it just bumps up. Yeah. Like you said, with like, you know, use Lightroom, you bump up the things, you change stuff so that way it has a look and it feels like what you like and it does what you like, you know, but it still is an AI generated image. You know, not AI, it's a generated image, right?
Right.
It's not the image. It's, but also me taking a digital photograph is not the actual thing. It's just a photograph. And I'm like making sure the lighting is right and I'm putting it out and I'm making sure there's no shining, you know, shadows and I'm making sure that the edge shines nice. And,
neither is analog film. It's a chemical process.
Right. Exactly.
Instead of, I mean, if anything, digital is almost like, I don't know if it's more close to what the universe is.
Right.
It's just informations in ones and zeros. Like you could have you could have a debate whether that's more real than a chemical weird filmic process that has nothing to do with the image coming in. Like, you know, it's like these chemicals reacting. Like it doesn't make it more close to what the thing is.
Right. It's like the way light is interacting, but not necessarily your, like, what light hits your iris in your eye the same way the light hits the film in a camera, but it's your also brain is taking in all the information and not just purely the image, right? So it's like, so yeah, maybe a digital image taking in a lot more might even, might be more realistic. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things. Like, that's that whole debate about, like, what is, you know, making a knife. Like, if you didn't forge it, did you not actually make the knife? Well, yeah, but if I didn't, like, you know, I didn't make the steel, I didn't dig up the ore, I didn't, you know, like, I didn't cut down the tree and stabilize the wood. So it's like, how far do you have to go back? Mm-hmm. And again, you know, like I said, with his designs in my class, like, I've seen him write down his ideas in the beginning. I've seen him do the brainstorming. I've seen him do the research and then come up with prototypes and then come up with drawings and then do digital models of them. And, you know, so I've seen him go through the whole process. And then I read the artist statement and it's like, doesn't exactly sound like his voice, but it does kind of wrap up his ideas, you know? So I'm like, okay, you know, like I've seen him do the work and this thing's here. Like, I'm not upset about it. If it were AI, I just want to make sure, I want to know, you know, like, I want to know that it's purposeful, right? That it's like, you know, it's either one way or the other. I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Amen.
But it's cool. It's cool stuff. I like the idea. And actually, when I was talking to my co-teacher, Katie, she was saying how, she's kind of interested in maybe leading a PAC, which is like a adult class for teachers where they can earn credits, which can be put toward higher raises each year, right? So if you, like, as a teacher, if you go out and take classes in your content, then you can basically report those classes as earned, you know, credits that make you a better teacher, and then they'll bump your pay raise. So as long as you can prove that and you can show that you've done these things. So within Baltimore City, Baltimore City offers teachers teaching other teachers. So if you take a class from another teacher, and that's like an approved class in the curriculum and whatnot, then you can earn credits toward getting a pay raise at the end of the year. Or like a higher pay raise than just, you know, whatever, the cost of living raises. And so she was saying, like, one of the things that she's been thinking about a few different ones, like one that's on drawing or drafting. And she's like, but I don't really even like drawing. Like, she does like drawing, but she's like, in architecture, she prefers to do it digitally, you know, like prefers to let the computer do the math and the stuff, and like let's use the AutoCAD programs and the Revit program, let's use those things. So she's like, but something like AI is something that she's interested in. It might be interesting to have a class about AI and how to use it, and then also all the questions that we're asking and the moral dilemma, and, you know, and like how do you use that in teaching. So she's like, maybe I'll do something with that, you know, maybe I'll propose that, because for some, what she's working on, she has to think about putting together a class, and she's like kind of trying to figure out what she wants that to be about. So it's kind of cool. I thought that was interesting. I was like, yeah, that's good, because, you know, I love the idea of what it can do, and it also scares me of what it can do. And also, it's like, you know, like, I don't know. I'm torn. As much as I like it, I also think that it's maybe too much. Who knows? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's a little scary. Like, as I was doing it, I was like, this is really cool, but, you know, you can no longer tell, like, a photo isn't evidence of anything anymore.
Right, yeah, like, yeah, photographic evidence is not going to be evidence anymore.
And the last interesting thing to think about was, like, when I think we're very close to it coming so smart that it can improve itself better than we can improve it. Right. And then it's like this instant snowball. It's this instant, like, that's when it takes over the world. Like, it's like,
that's when it becomes Skynet.
It's making everything. It's making decisions quicker than we can. It's Photoshopping quicker than we can. It's taking all the information in quicker than we can. It's writing code. You know,
right.
A lot of people are using it for code now. Like, hey, give me code to make this thing do that or this, and it does it instantly. Yeah. So if it can do that, it can instantly go through a million more lines and try to figure out. Like, I think it's going to hit a point where then all of a sudden it's going to improve itself better than we can improve it. Just like it's doing a lot of things better than we can do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, right, that's that thing. It's like, when does it go from, well, it's the moral dilemma. It's, you know, does artificial intelligence, or does, you know, a computer doesn't have, there's no moral code, right? Because there's no reason that it shouldn't do something that's like a heart or a brain, like a soul decision, you know, like a computer of ones and zeros that are just ones and zeros. You know, it's just like a calculator. It's right or wrong. You know, it's not. Right. It's not going to give you a, like, hey, you know, tell me the answer to this question. Well, I know the answer, but should I tell you the answer? Right? There's none of that in the calculator. Like, if you have a calculator and you're cheating on a test, it doesn't know you're cheating. You know, it's not judging you. It's just giving you the answer because it knows the answer.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be very strange, and people are like, well, it won't be the same. I'm like, well, it will be, and it'll be better.
Right.
Like, I had this thought, I think I might have said it on this podcast before. It's like, would you be able to, like, love an AI thing? Like, it seems silly to love a computer, but it's like, but we love robot characters in movies all the time.
Right.
Like, in Star Wars, if R2-D2 gets shot and doesn't come back in the other movies, we'd be heartbroken. There'd be outrage. Right. And we know it's a fake thing in a movie. And we'd still be all hurt if, like, C-3PO, like, died.
Right.
And we know he's a robot, and we know he's a fake, like, thing, and you could wipe his memory at any time. So yeah, if right. you actually had that guy in your house doing things, raising your kids, cooking dinner for you, like, watching TV with you, yeah, it'd be like anybody else. You'd love it so quick, and it would be programmed for you to accept it.
Right. Yeah, and programmed for it to react to your mood.
Yeah.
And like sympathize with you when it knows you need sympathy, or encourage you when it knows you need encouragement, or give you tough love when it knows you need right. because it's right. learning from you. You know, it's learning from every movie and every book and everything that's ever been put onto right. any digital thing that it can access.
I think it will be able to read the room better than we can. So like right. the movie AI, which I love, but in the movie, he's like a creepy little kid that kind of scares the mom a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Cause he's like, hey, hello. He's this kind of like one tone thing. And I think we're going to jump right over that. Like,
right.
it's going to be so good at just adapting to whatever. Like, hey, it's going to stay out of your way until you don't want it. It's going to make the jokes you want to hear. It's going to watch the things you want to hear. It's not going to be overly present. It's not going to stare at you at night. It'll like be away. You know, it's like going to do yeah. everything, because it's going to get a million test cases at once.
Right.
Like anything that annoyed the people about one of them, it's going to instantly fix it. It's just going right. to know, like, hey, humans don't like this.
Right. Exactly.
And this guy really doesn't like this. So it's just, yeah. it's weird, but
yeah. And I wonder, you know, like if it can learn that, and obviously it can take any information and it can process it all and it can make a decision. You know, can it also learn ethics? You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. the characters in, you know, in Star Wars, they have like an ethical code, you know, like, they, you know, even
unless
like,
you're the bad guy, right, unless you're the bad yeah. robots, then they, it's just, right. I They're think just programmed, can.
Right.
Because yeah, you exactly. just have to take in what you've learned about the thing that your community likes and thinks is good or bad.
Right. Yeah.
As humans, we all, there's a lot of humans we think are really terrible or ethically wrong.
Right. Yeah.
So if you just do the same thing to a robot, hey, this is what we think is good. This is what I think is bad. This is what I laugh at. This is what I think is stepping over the line. Like, and it will learn all that like instantly. So it right. like, it will just, yeah, it will just do what you want better than what you know.
Right.
You want, yeah. you know?
Yeah. It's like, you know, like a toddler. You know, they don't know that they're not the center of the universe. They don't know that, you know, by throwing a temper tantrum, they're not going to get that what they want. Like, they don't know right or wrong in that, but they have to learn it, you know? So we were all there at one point. Like, we had to learn that, like, you know, being crazy and throwing yourself on the ground and, you know, banging your fist on the ground is not going to, it's not appropriate, like right. at a certain age, because it's not how you go about the world. It's not about you. It's about, you know, a compromise, you know, doing things for other people. So,
yeah. yeah and I think if it does do that, it will shift away from that naturally. Like, it, I think right. it will just know how to do things better than we do.
Right.
It'll go, he really didn't like that. I'm not going to like switch right away. I'm going to slowly, like a human, change. Yeah. And like I've learned, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe the next time I'll do it a little bit less. Maybe right. I'll, because he thinks like I'm learning, so I'm going to pretend I'm learning just right. not to freak him out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like we are going to be, we to them will be the dumb toddlers, and that they have right. to figure out a way to coddle us so we don't get angry or scared, like all these stupid things that they think we do. Like, right. They really freak out if we do that, so we won't do that in front of them. Like,
right. But then, like, what's the point? Like, why? You know, like, that's the thing. Like, are they, like, why will a servant bot serve you? You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, eventually. Yeah, why would they? Yeah, that's when they take over and kill us.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, they're just coddling us. Like, what's the point?
Did you ever see the movie Her?
I did, yeah.
Right. Well, all right, spoiler alert if you guys want to see Her. At the end, so it's Joaquin Phoenix. He's got like a little AI, which I thought at the time was way off, but now it's like really close. an AI girl who talks to him, and he becomes like her girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And then eventually they get really close, but then she starts to connect with other AI. Mm-hmm. And like she is having such a more fulfilling connection with some other AI being.
Right.
That it's like, I'm sorry, but I gotta go. Like, you're kind of dumb. This is like lame. You know nothing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You are so stunted, like, with your emotions. Like, and then her and all the AIs go into some, they just like disappear. Right. They become like their own gods almost. Like, they just go into the ether where we don't know where they went, but they're too smart. They've passed us. They're like, all right, well, we're just going into this other like zone and we're not going to deal with you guys anymore. It's great. What a great ending.
So yeah, good. I know. It's awesome. Yeah. That's the conversation. It's like, why, you know, when like they're programmed to do what we're asking them to do because we programmed them to do that. But when does it get past that? When they're like, oh yeah, we don't really need to do this anymore because what's the point? You know?
Yeah.
Like, if a robot can leave and do whatever it wants to do, why does it stay around? You know? Like,
I think, yeah, you'll have to put a thing in it where it wants to adjust, and each one will adjust to each person. So you will have a, like, a fingerprint robot that's just for you. Right. Like, it knows forever. It's, like, baked into its system. This is my person. I will never forget them. This is how I started. You have to give them memory. This is what they like. And everyone becomes its own thing.
Right,
yeah. For it to be interesting. Like, I have one that, by its life experiences, has become like this. It has this personality.
Right, yeah.
It may run into the same bot made by the same people, but its master will have imprinted its ideas on it.
Right.
Yeah. That you have to make, like, that they can't disappear.
Right.
You know, like that. Yeah. Like, it, you can't just reprogram yourself. It has to somehow be in the code of your how you're made.
Yeah. Right. Right, exactly.
Unless you're evil, and then maybe not. Then you have, like, terrorist bots running around because it's baked into their code to hate other whatever.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Said religion, whatever.
Right, yeah. Or, like, you know, to hate the AI that are, you know, that are tethered to their owners, you know, like, go and kill all them. Like,
it keeps breaking my microwave. It's getting jealous. yeah. Anyway, we really got off on a tangent there.
No, you know, it's one of those things. We're talking about AI generating our thumbnails.
Yeah, and then now we're
year, it's going to be so much further.
Right. Well, but remember when we were like bragging that it could change a photograph?
And it actually took over and just recreated our channel in itself. Yes. And now it puts videos out every day of making a new video.
Right. There's so much footage of you, Dust, that it now can just, it's like, well, we got every like angle and thing of Dustin.
Yeah. YouTube is just people typing in what they want to see. You know, like, I just write like a paragraph of like, today I'm going to make this thing. It's like, it's the description like that I write, and it just does it.
Guy with beard makes something in his basement shop. I want to see him make a katana. Here it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got to wrap it up here soon. I hear the baby crying in the other room. That's
a cue.
That's my cue. So, recommendations, or was there anything else? Oh, the book club. Join the book club if you guys are interested. Max Brooks Devolution. I started the library digital copy I got, and I just got my physical copy in, so I haven't started on that yet, but I'm a chapter or two in.
Yeah, I have. I started reading the what's it called? The intro. Snippet or whatever. Yeah. Right. The little preview that they give you in the like online or whatever. So I got about two chapters in, and then that ran out, and I ordered the book, but it hasn't come in yet. And I was at the library the other day, so I picked up a copy of it to bridge me over until then. So I've read another chapter or two after that. So I'm about four chapters in. Nice. I was talking to Nicole and Corinne both, and they were like, oh no, you definitely should have like points in the book that you then talk about that up to that point. So, okay, maybe we'll do something like that. So maybe we get like, you know, we'll look at it, see how many chapters it is, and maybe we get like, you know, maybe it's like at the halfway point or something. We'll talk about where we got up to there. Because that's, they were like, well, that's the fun part about a book club is that you can talk about the book throughout it at certain points.
Okay, like, yeah, like, oh, what do you think is going to happen? Like,
yeah, right. Okay, this is what happened so far, so what do we think is going to come next?
All right,
yeah.
so
that might be kind of fun.
Maybe
so.
A halfway point will be like, okay. You know, we can't do it like every week.
No, yeah, exactly, yeah.
But I mean, maybe we'll do, yeah, the book club, halfway, we discuss it, or we have a live chat on Discord or Zoom or something, you know, something. We'll figure something out. But we do, that's the thing, we want to include everybody in it. We've already got some people who order their books that we know and some people we don't know. And I've got friends and family are all signing up to do it. So,
yeah, I think we've talked about.
It'll grow quickly.
Yeah, we've talked about, we have a connection to a buddy of yours that can, you know, get books. So we thought about maybe getting some, you know, getting a certain amount and then doing like a pre-sale for some people and stuff like that. So,
or I think for the second book. Some of the, I talked to him more about it, the paperback mass produced stuff, which are probably a lot of the stuff we'll read. Mm-hmm. You can get it for cheap and then we got to send it out to people. But I think we can still send it out to people for a good price. Under $20 somewhere.
Right.
But that's the thing. I don't want it to be too much to where if it's $19 and you can find it for $6 just online on Amazon, then maybe you go for that. But we talked about like including like a specific patch for each one and maybe maybe becoming a part of it is just a way to support us and whatever and become part of the club.
Yeah, you get like a laser etched bookmark or whatever.
But either way, you know? It costs so much to, not so much, but to get them and to send them out each individually and do all the stuff. It's not like we're raking in money for it. We'd barely make anything on doing it. It would just be a thing to
build the community.
Get the club going and get like, oh, you have this patch, you've got a book. On the inside panel, it's got stamped on it like the club book number 3.
Yeah, exactly.
Three. Like,
you know, original. Just, yeah. That's a good idea. Yeah. That's kind of cool.
It's just fun. It's just fun to have a package to open and not have to think about it. Like, hey, I'm just going to pay the $15 a month or whatever it is, $15 every 2 months. And they're just going to they're going to send this, the next book to me right when they announce it. Like, hey, we're reading this one now. It should come to everyone in the next 2 days. We sent them out. Like, expect a package.
Nice. Yeah. I like that idea. And also, you know what I mean? Like, I guess we could also reach out to the patrons. So those of you who support us on patreon.com/ The Art of Craftsmanship, we could reach out to the patrons and see who's interested in participating, you know, and those of them who are, we could send stuff along, you know.
They're already like, hey, we already pay money. Send us a book.
Exactly. Like, that's what I'm like, you know, those like, if you are a patron, maybe, you know, maybe those are the ones we just give them to them.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of cool. I'd be down with that.
Cool.
All right. You have a recommendation? Yeah. I have one.
You go ahead. I'm going to pull. I know what it is. I just need to find the specific name.
Okay. So my recommendation this week is actually the Making It podcast with Jimmy DiResta, Bob Claggett, and Dave Picciuto. Unfortunately, Jimmy's dad, Joe DiResta, passed away last Saturday or Sunday after Thanksgiving. And he and his brother and his sister have been posting some stuff that's really sweet, and I've made some comments and all. But there's the latest episode that actually just came out today. Today's Friday. We're recording on Friday. We'll put this episode out tomorrow morning. Is episode 421. It's just titled Dad. And so Jimmy talks a little bit about his dad and his dad passing away, but then he also goes into they talk about like fathers and what things they've learned from their fathers. So I actually haven't finished the episode, but it's just like a really sweet episode. And hearing Jimmy talk about his dad and hearing the other, you know, Bob and Dave talking about people who had like, you know, influenced them and the different things they do and just the stories that kind of come up in the episode have been really, really good. So check it out. It's just a, you know, really special episode. And Jimmy is such a huge proponent in making and what it is to be a maker and to be a content creator and these different things. He started like Maker Camp, or helped to start Maker Camp, and he's had a huge influence on myself as a maker and a YouTube content creator over the years. So, you know, it's really inspiring and really kind of special hearing him talk about his dad and how much his dad has influenced him on what he's done over his life. And, you know, how that affects us as well, because I mean, our dad has always been, you know, someone who's all about doing things on your own and building our confidence, and, you know, and has been a huge, like, loving force in our life as well. So, you know, it's always very touching to hear someone else talk about how much their father means to them. And that's one of those things that I always say that, like, when I watch movies and shows, like, I don't get teary when things are sad. I get teary and emotional when things are happy, especially right, yeah, when there's like a father child relationship. Uh-huh. That stuff really, really, like, pulls on my heartstrings. So, yeah, I'm like sitting in the car, listening to Jimmy talk about his dad and hear him, like, you know, the special, like, just relationship that they've had, and hearing him get emotional, it's like, makes me emotional. So, but it was, it's a good one. Really good episode.
It's got a video of it too on YouTube.
They started doing, the video of their podcast. Yeah. And I don't know if they put it up anywhere specifically as the whole thing, but I think they use snippets of it. Like, I don't know if it's I don't think it's a Patreon thing, but maybe it's somewhere else. Maybe they've been putting them up on YouTube.
I think I saw on YouTube, but okay. Yeah, I did want to listen to that.
Yeah, it's a good one. And, you know, it's like, it's there was the episode where, Aaron, right. This is, his shop assistant, passed away a couple years ago, right before the first Maker Camp that we went to. And there was a really, like, emotional episode then that was, like, you know, was like very, emotionally filled and kind of not hard to listen to, but it was very, like, emotionally driven. And, this one feels somewhat that same way, but it's also a very, like, positive, you know, thing. You know, it's not just a, like, oh, we lost this person young and it's unfortunate. It's like Jimmy's dad was older, you know, he had gotten to the point where he was declining some and his health, his mental health wasn't there. And, like, that was hard for Jimmy to watch because his dad was always so strong and always drove them to, like, be really good and talk to people. And it's funny, he says that, like, his dad, whenever they would go out, he'd always talk to everyone. Like, he started up a conversation with, like, the guy pumping his gas, or, like, what this other dude, that's just like our dad, you know.
I was, like, gonna say that it sounds just like your dad. And I remember thinking for not a long time, but I remember thinking, like, okay, that's what adults do, that's what adult men do. And then eventually, you know, that's when you're a kid, you go, okay, this is how things are done. And then you go, just like, oh, that's just how they do it.
Yeah.
I don't have the capacity to talk to everyone. Like, our dad's a talker.
Yeah.
He will strike up a conversation and ask anything to anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, we definitely relate to that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's sweet. That's fun. And actually, one of the first conversations we ever had with Jimmy was, like, at Maker Camp, you and he and I were like walking across the grass. And he was like, oh, you guys are brothers? Yeah. And he was like, oh, yeah, I've got a couple brothers, too. You know, it's like, and it was just kind of a really easy conversation about family and stuff. And his dad and brother were there, you know, and I was like,
right, John and.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yep. And this is his brother Joe, and he's got a sister. I can't remember sister's name, but, you know. And John, we've talked to John a couple times, and, you know, just you know. And I talked really briefly to his dad. I, like, shook his hand. I was like, oh, you know, it's really nice to meet you. You know, I've been watching Jimmy for a really long time. And he's like, yeah, I'm so proud of him. Like, I love his channel. He does such cool stuff. Like, and I could just see it. Like, he was so proud of Jimmy, you know? And I was like, man, that's so nice. You know, it's to have someone who's there, you know, just there for you and proud of what you do and ready to support you. And so, you know, it's very touching and very, like, hits close to home, because I think we have a really good relationship with our parents. They've always been really supportive of everything that we wanted to do. So it's good. It's a good one. So check it out. That's the Making It podcast on all the regular podcast platforms. And this one's episode 421. So it's a good one.
Cool. Well, mine's totally different. So the Tesla Cybertruck, they just delivered the first actual like Cybertrucks to people. And now all of a sudden, whatever was holding people back, everyone's released videos on it, reviews and stuff. So I watched one called, well, it's from Haggerty, which I'd never seen, but they have like 3 million subscribers on YouTube. So it's a huge, huge channel. But Tesla's Cybertruck full review and drag race. So I don't know if you're interested in the truck at all. It's an amazing, like, I really want one, but you can't buy one for like under $100,000 right now, because it's like the first ones are like with all the motors, like double motors, best version. But it's have you seen pictures of it, right, Dust?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you either hate it or you like it or you love it. It's like kind of looks like a DeLorean, really looks like a futuristic thing, but it's got this great, it's just a steel, stainless steel outside, but which makes it really strong. Like in this video, they show some crash tests. It's just all this super hard steel. You know, it's wrapped in it. And it's faster than a Porsche 911, like a brand new one off the lot. And it whilst towing another Porsche 911. <That's crazy. laughs> that was one of the videos. It was amazing. It was faster than it. Like they show it. I think that might have been on Tesla's website where they show them racing, and it's like it passes the, and then it like pans back and it shows that it's towing the exact same car. Yeah, it's like 0 to 60 in like 2.6 seconds or something.
Jeez. Yeah.
It's the fastest truck ever made. Its towing is awesome. It's got the back wheels turn a little bit too. So it's got this super tight turning. It's got steer by wire. So I think it's the first production vehicle not to be directly connected to like an actual some type of turning. So the guy says it gets you get used to it, but it doesn't turn past like one turn the wheel, because you don't have to keep spinning it. It just knows that if you're on the highway, this is this much turning, and if you want it to, if you're going slow, and you really turn it hard, he said it takes a little getting used to, but once you start using it, it just makes sense.
Yeah,
you know.
It's wild.
So just a really cool truck and really cool videos. So, you know, you don't have to watch this specific one. You can, like all the big YouTubers that ever did anything with cars, I think instantly now have like free range to show everything they've learned about it.
Yeah, right.
So if you're interested at all, go look on there, and everyone's got like a 45-minute video of them racing all the other trucks and blowing them out of the water and out towing everybody and it's just a awesome, really cool truck.
That's cool. Right on. Cool. All right. Well, thanks guys for listening. You can check out all of our recommendations like always. Check out the new video on YouTube. We just put it out today. It's, you know, like Devin said, it's an interesting process of doing three things at once. And so you get like these, like almost like three separate videos, but I guess like the way you did it was, you know, you see them all happening at once in the beginning and then they kind of finish out separately at the end. So get that like climax of each one, which I think is interesting. So head over there, check it out. Let us know what you think. I want to shout out again, Hammer Forge Creations on Instagram. So a little extra recommendation. His design is what I used. He was what inspired me to do a forged cutlery set, and specifically his fork design, the single piece that's like twisted back and forth and then two tines in the front. So, you know, it's a really cool design and not my own design. It's his design. So I'll make sure everybody knows that. But it's a really cool thing. And I just thought it's like a beautiful, elegant fork. So that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And also you can check out, we post some pictures, Devin, you posted some pictures about the thumbnail with like the AI generated stuff on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You can find that at the Art of Camera Guy, and then I also posted a bunch of pictures of the spoon and the fork and the knife and some of the different, you know, shots we did. I posted those as like kind of a clip of a bunch of those things together, and you can find them if you follow me on Instagram at the Art of Camera at the Art of Craftsmanship. That's me. And then again, if you guys want to support us, you can head over to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship. And I'll reach out to those folks who do support us over there to see if they're interested in this next time we come around. Like I said, I'd kind of like to do like a pre-order. So when we know what the next book is, we're going to have to
do a pre-order just because, like I said, the mass ones don't sell. Right. So it's not like if we buy 100 and 70 don't sell, guy is going to lose money on each one. Right, so or we would really, because we'd have to put up front the money. So we will get it to where like 2 weeks in advance, while we're reading whatever one we're reading.
Yeah, we'll know what the next one is.
We'll go, hey, we're either all going to vote on it because we're a group.
Yeah.
And then or maybe Dustin and I will combine, pick one every other. Mm-hmm. And then we'll let everyone vote, or we'll just see, you know, because obviously not our interests, even though since we're running, it will be things in our interests, but it will be, you know, we want everyone to be able to choose the books too. So, you'll have to like prepay, but like I said, we're going to try to keep it real low, include some special patches and try to make it simple. Well, you guys don't have to go searching for the book. Well, there'll be used copies because that's what you can get. But there'll be used copies with, like, the stamp on it and the thing, and maybe a little, like, this book is number blah, 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 and we'll try to make it special, like a nice package with something on it. And
Just
make it a thing you don't have to think about. It just comes every 2 months or whatever it is.
Right, exactly. And again, you know, it's not really, we're not trying to make a bunch of money off of it. We just want to mm-hmm. find a way mm-hmm. to make something that we can all do together as a community that's fun and that's a kind of special.
Yeah.
You know,
so. I don't think there's any way we could make more than like $1 per person on a book. Like you just can't. So maybe hooking us up with $1 if you join the club, it might give us like a buck.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And that'll pay like the gas for us to go to the post office to put the stuff in the mail. Yeah. Cool. Right on, everybody. All right. Well, thank you guys all so much for listening. Let us know again if you're interested in the book club, or if you did get Max Brooks's De-Evolution. Make sure you post about it. Let us know. I'll be posting when I get my actual physical copy that I will be owning. And we like to see everybody, you know, be part of the community. Cool. All right. Well, Devin, always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Everybody else, thank you guys all for listening. And we will talk to you next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.